I've been a preacher. For more than 30 years, I've preached in churches all around the world. I trained pastors in the principles of interpreting ancient texts. The moment I began to read the Bible alongside its sources, the ancient Mesopotamian narratives, my view completely changed. And it's quite clear, the Elohim stories of the Bible are not about God, they're about something completely different. Vice President J.D. Vance says that he thinks that ETs are demons. Over the last 10 years, my own research has led me to a different conclusion. If life in an amenable environment is the norm in the cosmos rather than the exception, if this is a populated cosmos, then the idea that planet Earth is home to intelligent life, us, and that every other planet in the universe is populated by demons, that idea is ridiculous and is founded on absolutely nothing that can be found in the Bible. How the Elohim of the Bible relate to today's experiences of ET encounters and UAPs? Well, that's something far more complex. Before we get into today's content, on behalf of the Fifth Kind TV, I want to say a big thank you to Surfshark for sponsoring today's content. Surfshark is a VPN that allows us all to become citizens of the world through online access. If you're like me, you'll enjoy watching online content from countries all around the world. But I live in Australia, and what I'm shown in internet searches will be different to what you're shown in Canada, America, the Philippines, Germany, the Netherlands, or wherever you're watching from. By using Surfshark, I'm able to access a world of online content and see all the things that you see and many other things beside. Surfshark enables us to become citizens of the world through online availability. Get fully protected. Go to surfshark.com/fifthkind and get 4 months for free. Surfshark offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you try it and you don't like it, you can easily cancel your subscription and receive a full refund. With Surfshark, you can swim under the radar in the sea of online content. In an interview on The Benny Show in March 2026, J.D. Vance explicitly framed UFOs or UAPs in spiritual, not extraterrestrial language. "I don't think they're aliens," he said. "I think they're demons." And when asked about unexplained phenomena, Vance says that he defaults to the Christian understanding, adding that one of the devil's great tricks is to convince people he never existed. J.D. Vance converted to Roman Catholicism in 2019, and so he's very comfortable with spiritual language. But his view that ETs are demons is not the authoritative Roman Catholic view on the matter. In May 2026, Monsignor Stephen Rossetti, a Roman Catholic exorcist for the Archdiocese of Washington, made a broadcast in which he said, "It's my personal belief that probably many, if not most of these UFO sightings, are in fact demons. They can do things we can't." The local cardinal, Robert McElroy, acted swiftly, announcing Father Rossetti's removal from that role, stating that linking UFOs to demonic activity, quote, "gravely undermines the Church's very precise teaching on the devil, demons, and exorcism." Clearly, a spectrum of views exist within the Roman Catholic community of faith, but the idea that ETs are demons is emphatically not the official view of the Catholic Church. Monsignor Corrado Balducci, for many years the Vatican's senior advisor in paranormal ministry, asserts that UAPs and ET encounters are encounters not with demonic phenomena, nor with psychotic breaks, but are the experience of a completely different kind of entity, one that merits serious study. Now, clearly, different people have different views. Not every Catholic believer holds to the same ideas. But what's the merit of J.D. Vance's idea that all ETs are demons? What's the merit of Monsignor Corrado Balducci's claim that they are completely different things? I think how you approach this idea depends very much on your view of the Bible. So let's say there are four approaches you could take to the Bible. And the first is to believe it's all fiction and it's not worth bothering with. The second is that it comprises a kaleidoscope of literature, poetry, prophecy, preaching, propaganda, some sayings of God, and lots of sayings of people about God. The fundamentalist view of the Bible is that everything it claims is true, morally, scientifically, historically. The hyper-fundamentalist view is that there is no truth, no reliable arbiter of information outside of the Bible. If a person holds to that fourth view, the hyper-fundamentalist view, then the whole of reality has to fit into a finite number of categories. If something is real, then it's either God, the devil, angels, demons, human, animal, vegetable, mineral, or it doesn't exist. And so, according to that view, if the Bible doesn't explicitly talk about life on other planets, then it doesn't exist. If the Bible doesn't explicitly talk about UAPs or ET encounters, then they're not real. However, when confronted with real phenomena that appear to be aberrations to this neat and tidy worldview, well, if it's an aberration, then it must be demonic. And I think that's why many people reach for this language. If they've had an experience that's disturbed or frightened them, it can't be angelic, it can't be of God, it must be demonic. So runs the logic. But I believe that reality can't be forced into a finite list of boxes, and that there are more things in the universe than you or I have ever imagined. What are the implications of the human race being a mid-ranking species in a populated universe? Living on a world where we predate upon other forms of life, where we eat some of our neighbors and farm some of our neighbors and exploit a great deal of the flora and fauna of our planet, by that analogy, might we not experience contact with some species who have an exploitative attitude towards human life on Earth? I think coming to terms with the idea that we are a mid-ranking species in a populated universe means that we might look at even quite negative and terrifying encounters through a different lens. We wouldn't call a tiger evil because it eats a goat. We wouldn't call a bird evil because it eats a worm. It's a very unsettling idea that we might be somewhere in the mid-rankings of intelligent life in the cosmos. But if we accept it, we do have to think through the implications of it. Our ancestors talked about ET contact in very different ways, and some of the encounters they reported were positive and nurturing towards the human experience, and others were predatory, were exploitative. And I think we need to recover this idea of a spectrum of experience when we look at what's happening in the present. Since the Bible contains no explicit language with regard to life on other planets, how should believers look to the cosmos? Should they expect to find extraterrestrial life? And how should they interpret it? In 2009, the Roman Catholic Church held a colloquium at the behest of Pope Benedict XVI, and it gathered together top theologians and scientists and scholars to address the question, what are the theological implications of contact with other civilizations? And we heard from senior spokesmen for the Curia, which included Father Jose Gabriel Funes, the director of the Vatican Observatory, Reverend Dr. Guy Consolmagno, the senior astronomer for the Vatican Observatory, and Monsignor Corrado Balducci, longtime advisor in paranormal ministry for the Vatican. And the three of them really spoke as one voice when they said, there's no theological issue with discovering other life in the cosmos and having contact with other civilizations. It just means the Creator has been busier than we thought, and we should be ready to embrace a brother or sister alien. Francis Crick, the Nobel Prize-winning co-discoverer of the double helix of DNA, argued that the timeline for planet Earth simply wasn't long enough but the complex structures of DNA to have evolved by chance. In his view, the mathematics point to only one possible conclusion, that life originated not on Earth, but in outer space. Francis Crick believed in a theory called panspermia, which is that the genetic coding for conscious, biological, intelligent life is as endemic to the cosmos as are the properties of gravity and light. If that is so, then whenever that genetic coding lands in an amenable environment, it will produce forms of life similar to the ones we're familiar with on planet Earth. Now, if that's the case, if in amenable environments, life is the norm in the cosmos rather than the exception, first, it tells us we are part of a populated cosmos. Second, it tells us that all life in the cosmos is related. And from that point of view, the idea that planet Earth is populated by human beings and all the other planets of the cosmos are populated by demons is ridiculous. Yet it's a view I have put to me frequently by people coming from a start point in faith. That belief has no footing at all in anything that can be found in the Bible. I think one reason that some believers equate ET life with demons is to be found in the Book of Enoch. It speaks about contact between human beings and another kind of being called the Watchers. And the Watchers is the Book of Enoch's version of the Bene Elohim in Genesis 6. Now, these two stories belong to a global family of story that speaks of hybridization in humanity's deep past. But the Book of Enoch describes these Watchers as angels who fell from their proper assignments to come and interfere with human beings. And because that's read through a theological lens, the idea of falling from their proper place and doing something that is forbidden, when that goes through a theological filter, it becomes a story about sin and wickedness rather than a breach of some ethical code among our neighbors. And so now you're using the language of angels, demons, sin, demonic. Maybe this clouds the picture for some readers of the wider canon of the Bible. The biblical word for angels, whether in the Hebrew or the Greek, in fact does nothing to describe the genus of the being in question. Whether you're looking at the Hebrew or the Greek, angel is a functional word. It means emissary, agent, or messenger. It doesn't tell you anything about the biology of the being in question. And so when we get to the Enoch story of these Watchers coming and hybridizing with human females, we are not being told anything spiritual or religious in that moment, necessarily. And the hybridization is an interesting theme. It's there in the Bible, it's there in other ancestral narratives around the world. These Watchers must have been pretty close to human beings to have been able to gene splice or hybridize or genetically modify, whatever the language we might choose today. And yet, by all accounts, the offspring that resulted from this contact experience were a little different from regular human beings. They had no growth inhibitor, and they became giants. Now, these are referenced by Josephus, the Jewish historian in the first century of the Common Era, and he believed that this was a real-world experience in the deep history of the human race. And he pointed to giants in his present day as evidence that this was a real-world experience. Today, when people hear stories of hybridization, whether it's in Greek mythology, Norse mythology, Celtic mythology, Hebrew mythology, Mesopotamian mythology, people react as if this can only be fiction, as if they've never heard the like, whereas in ancestral story, this theme is very difficult to avoid. Today, we have the technology of gene adaptation, gene splicing, genetic modification. Ancestral stories suggest this was part of humanity's experience in the deep past. If you're watching this, then you probably already sense that the mainstream inherited story is probably not the whole story, that there are some pieces missing. I've made a free module available for you from Ancient Knowledge Academy, where we begin to look again at the ancient words of the Bible, and especially the language of Elohim and Yahweh and the other mysterious beings whose presence is often hidden by conventional translations. If you've ever wondered what the texts are really describing, then follow the link, watch the free module, and take your first steps inside Ancient Knowledge Academy. I wish you health and peace. In an official study of the UFO phenomenon undertaken by the British Ministry of Defence, reports of hybridization experiences are expressed in a way that is easily missed. These very particular encounter experiences are referenced using the language of human interface. Human interface may be the modern language, but it's a testimony that goes back thousands of years. While hybridization narratives, ancient and modern, suggest beings which are physical and very similar to ourselves, the biblical account of demons reports something quite different. Nowhere in the Bible, Old Testament or New Testament, are demons referred to as physical entities. And we have to accept that some of the UFO-UAP phenomena are definitely physical encounters. The Legacy Program does work on the physical materials obtained through UAP retrievals. And we've heard publicly from three scientists involved in that study: the eminent French information scientist Jacques Vallée, American astrophysicist Eric W. Davis, and Stanford microbiologist Dr. Gary Nolan have all spoken publicly about their own work on metamaterials. These are physical phenomena, whereas when you go to the New Testament and Old Testament, demons are not physical beings. We see them infesting physical beings. We see them influencing human beings, almost like an energy-based being, but they operate in a kind of parasitic way on biological life, almost like a virus influencing the experience and the behavior of biological life, and then perhaps feeding off the negative emotions and the negative outcomes resulting from that influence. It's in that way that the Bible talks about demons. So demons do not have bodies of their own. They will infest a person or a place or an animal. In the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, and Luke, the evangelists tell the story of the Gadarene demoniac. The story of the Gadarene or Gerasene demoniac shows us that there's something inside this poor man that is tormenting him inwardly. And in the story, Jesus gets that entity out of the man and sends it into a herd of pigs. The entity or group of entities are invisible. Their effect on the man and on the pigs is visible. The man was tormented by these entities, and the pigs were so tormented that they ran off a cliff and killed themselves. But the demons themselves didn't have a body of their own. So the idea of talking about physical encounters with physical things as if it's a demonic encounter seems to miss that distinction. Stories in the Gospels of Mark chapter 9, Matthew 17, and Luke 9 all follow the same pattern of an invisible, energy-based entity being removed from a person. And that is the pattern of deliverance or entity removal as we find it in the New Testament. And it follows on from an understanding of what unclean spirits did in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew scriptures. The Hebrew term sedim, found in passages like Deuteronomy 32 and Psalm 106, refer to mysterious, invisible, foreign beings associated with idolatry. The words for unclean spirit, ruach tameah, literally mean unclean breath. The language of unclean breath tells you that it's something invisible inside a person that we're talking about when we use the biblical language of demons and unclean spirits. This same pairing of ideas can be found in the Greek, pneuma akathaton, breath or spirit that is unclean. So it's against that kind of background that Monsignor Corrado Balducci insists that people who report close encounters with ETs are not encountering a demon. They are not having a psychotic break. They are experiencing a completely different kind of entity, one that merits serious study. Perhaps another reason that people sometimes interpret UAPs and ETs with spiritual language is that some witnesses of UAPs and some experiences of close encounters report mental interference, an interference in their sense information and in their state of consciousness. Listening to the reports of experiencers, it's clear that some people are very frightened and feel invaded by the experiences they have. To be frightened or disturbed by some aberration, it's natural for some people who have this vocabulary to reach for the language of demonic. But it may be that what is being experienced is something unknown, unfamiliar, something technological, and maybe at times a different mode of communication. In my study of ancient texts, I find that our ancestors speak of encounters that cover a great kaleidoscope of experiences, and some are terrifying, some are disturbing, some are like physical assaults, some are abduction experiences. But there are other ancient accounts that describe contact between our ancestors and visitors from other civilizations, contact that was extremely positive. In the Book of Enoch itself, the contact is positive, and it results in a period of rich cultural exchange in which we learn medicine, science, astronomy, fashion, makeup, something quite different to the vision of invasion of the body snatchers or Mars attacks. Every year, I take people to the Van and Bitlis provinces in Turkey, and we look at the carvings left behind by the Iron Age Urartian people. Their cuneiform inscriptions and the symbology of their carvings tells a story of positive contact with non-human others who came and intervened in the human story at a time when our survival on planet Earth hung in the balance. And there are indigenous cultures all around the world that say that our survival and our leaps forward into megalithic building, into agricultural science, were the gifts of contact with non-human intelligence in the deep past. In the Eden Enigma, I show that our Iron Age ancestors looked forward to the return of the non-human beings their ancestors had known because of all the advantages of technology sharing that had resulted from that contact. Brigadier General Haim Meshed was for 28 years Israel's chief of space security. It was his job to know if there was an ET presence and if it was any kind of a security threat. The Brigadier General explains that on the basis of his 28 years of privileged information, his understanding is that we have been in contact at a covert government level for more than 80 years. In his book, Haim Meshed says that this contact has included the sharing of technology at a covert level, advanced technology that would allow us to manipulate space-time and achieve interstellar travel. This technology sharing is happening behind closed doors, being explored by covert units, funded by black budgets, and known only to covert layers in governments around the world. And he named the US government and the government of Israel. My understanding is that the legacy program, which has been delegated to covert units within the aerospace industry, is working hard to try and replicate the properties of the metamaterials that we've retrieved. And until we're able to replicate that, the rules of engagement won't change, and the policy of non-disclosure from our ET neighbors will remain in place. And yet in recent years, the policy of non-disclosure at a human level has been leaking like a sieve. Today, we're seeing a real push and pull in the journey of disclosure. Some within the military intelligence community would love to see more disclosure, and some would like to see far less. But so much information is now there in the public domain, especially since the House Oversight Subcommittee hearing of July 26th, 2023. In the public domain is the fact that US military intelligence has access to entire craft, to non-human biologics, and to pilots. And so clearly the controversy is not around the existence of those things. The controversy is about something else. And I think it has to do with who we are and where our governments sit in the great chain of command that oversights Project Earth. In 2026, President Trump has called upon the military intelligence community to declassify its UFO, UAP, and ET files. But will the Secret Services, whose whole existence revolves around gathering and keeping secrets, be willing to disclose those to Congress or to the general public? And is the general public ready for what might be revealed? If we're just talking about present contact and acknowledging that, then I don't think there is a great panic to be feared. Recent polling in the US suggests that about two-thirds of the American public, if you told them we're in contact, we've been in contact for 80 years, would say, yes, I've more or less worked that out. I think the deeper issues of who we are, where our governments sit in the chain of command, I think that might be the real thorny problem. That might be the conversation that our military intelligence is not wanting our governments, presidents, and prime ministers to be having with the general public. But is disclosure of contact something that should be feared? Conversations in Washington have framed this topic of disclosure as a matter of national security. If there is a threat to the national security of the United States of America, should that not be the business of Congress? On what basis do military intelligence units keep such information to themselves? In the UK, where I grew up, prime ministers can't demand information from secret services because the theory is the secret services owe their allegiance to the crown, not to an elected prime minister. And in the United States, the military intelligence community owns its allegiance to the American people, not to the president. And so there really is a legal problem around authority when it comes to demanding declassification or demanding disclosure. But our ancestors had a different perspective, and that is that contact is happening all the time. It's not only senior politicians or the leaders of aerospace corporations who have encounter experiences. These are being reported all around the world on every continent. If we simply gather together the grassroots experience of UAPs and close encounters, a very different understanding of ET contact would emerge. In The Invasion of Eden, I suggest that it's high time that we human beings made a great leap forward through technology sharing with our ET neighbors. I believe we have friends in high places today, just as we did in the deep past, in those stories told in the Iron Age. Conversations about national security distort the conversation and only show one side of the picture. What if we have helpers in high places wanting to support the progress of the human race, just as our ancestors reported in stories out of ancient Turkey, Armenia, Iran, Syria, Iraq, and all around the world? What do we miss by framing these experiences as demonic if in reality they are something far different? If the language of national security distorts the conversation, and if the language of theology also distorts the conversation, then where do we go for the language to describe what's happening in the present day? If you listen to the whistleblowers coming out of US military intelligence, it's the language of transmedium anomaly, non-human biologics, In our ancestral stories, we have the language of powerful ones, sky people, helpers, tutors, and sages. The more language we have to describe present phenomena, the more finessed a conversation we can have. And so to listen to our ancestors, to find what language they use, to get to grips with what their understanding was of what contact means, I think can only inform what we're experiencing today. To frame it all through one lens as demonic or alien is unhelpful, and we need to be approaching this topic with all our emotional intelligence and with all the resources bequeathed to us by our ancestors. That's why when I approach these topics in my books, it's always rooted in indigenous story, an ancestral story, and in the language of ancient texts, such as those from out of ancient Mesopotamia, such as the Mesoamerican stories of the Popol Vuh, and such as the stories of the Bible. I think we should be alert but not alarmed, and to be ready to encounter the things that are happening right now in the 21st century. I've made a free module available for you from Ancient Knowledge Academy, where we begin to look again at the ancient words of the Bible, and especially the language of Elohim and Yahweh and the other mysterious beings whose presence is often hidden by conventional translations. If you've ever wondered what the texts are really describing, then follow the link, watch the free module, and take your first steps inside Ancient Knowledge Academy. At the Academy, we find ways of bringing ancient and ancestral story to bear on our own worldview. If you're on a journey of reframing faith or old beliefs or reframing your worldview to get a deeper understanding of who we really are, what our history tells us as a human species, what our potential is, then you will enjoy the topics we explore at Ancient Knowledge Academy. We look at ancient civilizations and ancient texts. We consider lost time and study how belief systems can shape perception. Without panic, without dogma, and with an open mind to continue in our journey of exploration. And if you'd like to stand in the landscape where so many of these origin stories converge, the lands around Lake Van, the lands of modern Turkey and ancient Armenia, the place many traditions point to as the reboot of civilization, I take a group there every year, because standing in the place itself is very different to reading a story. If you'd like to join me in the Van province, go to ancientknowledgetours.com. And if you'd like to continue a journey with an online learning community, come to ancientknowledgeacademy.com. Wherever you are in your journey, whether you're just curious or if you're redefining how you understand humanity, you are very welcome to continue your exploration with me.